Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and it is cool there in Houston, I'm told, or cooler, right, than it has been. That's good to know. I wish Dan were able to join us today, but he is in the throes of the partnership slash corporate tax filing deadline here coming up this week, so he's taking the day off. At least from the radio. I just want to mention here at the outset that just because you listen to today's show, that does not make you our client or a client. Happy to entertain that notion. If you don't have existing professional advisors that know how to consult with you on real estate taxation, retirement plan taxation, and investing in private partnerships, real estate private partnership syndications, and then also pretty much everything we do across the board has an eye out on getting you to the zero tax rate as you get into retirement. And that may surprise some of you that are listening, that you can actually get to retirement. And depending on your income streams, where they're coming from, what they consist of, many people pay no tax. And it's not because they're not putting cash in their bank account. It's because they know the difference, I'll say it very slowly, between cash flow and net income. Cash flow is what we want. It's typically not taxable like net income is, or taxable income. And you could have two people that each make, let's just say each receive $150,000 a year as an example, and one of the parties will, the other would pay, depending on whether they're single or filing joint, anywhere from, $15,000 to $35,000. So, again, cash flow versus taxable income or net income. Okay, so that said, if you don't have advisors and you want to consider working with us, please go to our website at baplanner.com, and top right, you're going to see a link for client forms. I believe it's top right. Or actually, it's just forms. I'm sorry. Next to the top right, and then the absolute top right, is a call scheduler. So fill out the forms, then click the call scheduler, get on my call calendar. Be happy to spend a few minutes with you to talk about your goals and objectives and some of your current facts and circumstances to see if we can help you on multiple fronts. You know, we can help you with some tax planning once we know a little more about your situation. And by the way, right now is the time to be planning. It's not next March when you walk into your accountant's office or upload your data to their encrypted document management portal, as the case may be. But then it's too late to do most things, at least the big things that can really save you some money. And we plan year-round. We hope that you can start thinking like that if you're not already, and then you can use some of those savings to invest in private real estate partnership transactions, perhaps, to generate more retirement wealth. And in any event, so let's go to the current news. And as those of you that listen to us know, we have a companion website to the BA Planner BeAPlannerShow.com website. It's called BeAPlannerShow.com. And we have a resource page there that I try to upload sorted articles each week that are relevant to the areas that we opine on. And this week I actually put some up in advance of the Friday show. We covered most of those on Friday. And by the way, for those of you that aren't in the know yet, we started a Friday show on KSCV, Friday 11 a.m. A couple weeks ago, and it's also live. Both the Houston shows are live. The other markets we're in do a replay. And in any event, so we've already gone over some of these articles, but I just wanted to mention the ones, let's see, that are shown on the episode for the 10th of September. And just not really all that noteworthy, but there was an article about names. You know, it is interesting how apartments get their names, and it's also interesting to see that when you start looking and working with investors across the country, how that almost every major metro recycles the same names. It's amazing how often you see the same names, right down to the point where I've got to look at the URL again that I'm on and make sure that I am in something to do with Phoenix or something to do with Southern Cal or Brooklyn. But anyway, and as they point out in this article, how well do you think a property might rent if it were named Barry's Neglect or Shepherd's Misfortune? Just two monikers that they actually say that back in colonial times, those were real names. That seems odd, but they're probably not going to rent up as fast or even as much in today's status-conscious world. But in any event, I think it's interesting to see. Apparently, there's a gentleman here that, you know, the guy that wrote this article is in the know, but there's some people that make a good living ascribing names for developers to name their properties. Let's see, another article. You know, the internal rate of return, probably the most misunderstood math metric of all the syndication math metrics that we talk about from time to time. And, you know, I rarely stop to tell you as we fly by, you know, give you a drive-by on some of the private placements, some of the current offerings that are out there that, you know, we try to talk about one or a couple of them maybe on each show. We'll say, well, you know, it targets a certain IRR without explaining what that means. And part of the problem is there's not a good consensus on what it really means. Yeah, we know generally what it means is something to do with a return. In fact, it's internal rate of return is what IRR stands for. The problem is it's not a consistent comp when you look at it from one project to the next, because it obscures the time continuum in many cases to where you don't really get the true effect of the timing of the cash flows that come in. And further, it assumes that you keep those cash flows working. And I'm going to say something about that concept, because this article makes the case that, let's see, the person that's being quoted says the IRR assumes the money will be reinvested at the same time that it's received. in the real world, this is not always the case. Well, I would argue that with multifamily investments, it's absolutely the case that your money is working while you're asleep at night, and the appreciation that occurs, maybe that's not money in your pocket, but don't think for a minute that that shouldn't be considered in your calculations. In fact, I would suggest to you it's a compounded effect even, because you know how else would you calculate the difference between what you invest and what you get back when a lot of it has nothing to do with cash-on-cash return or internal rate of return, et cetera, or average annual return. The value of multifamily investments is based on the concept of net operating income and a cap rate. And those are both two dynamics that are happening almost on their own, automatically, if you will. Actually, it is, in many cases, it's got a certain automatic component. There's not much that you as a investor can control regarding the IRR and the cap rate. Those are market forces, for the most part, that dictate. Well, the IRR is not necessarily, it kind of straddles the concept of expenses, income, and some market issues. But the cap rate's something you have absolutely nothing to do with. Your lead partner has nothing to do with that. But your lead partner and you, depending on the type of project you're invested in, if the lead partner seeks counsel and votes, if you vote on certain matters as a passive, which is rare in the large apartment arena, then you can have an impact on the net operating income by, you know, helping cast the die, perhaps, for what kind of expense load you're willing to undertake and what type of amenities you feel like have value, etc. And, you know, I guess I should say, but anyway, I want to take issue with the concept that, you know, the income is not ongoing, even though it may not realize current cash flow. And trust me, if you're in the right project, the value of that apartment building is literally increasing in your sleep, and you hope it doesn't get decimated by the cap rate going the other way, because again, you don't control the cap rate, and the cap rate is essentially what the market, i.e. the bank that might refinance your loan or a buyer, is going to seek in terms of the return that they want on their investment. But in any event, for those that don't understand why we like apartments and why we like real estate in general, and why we really like syndications, and this may be a surprise after what I just said about large apartments, we like small apartments, and we're liking small apartments even more when we look at the fees that it takes to play in the big leagues with the large syndicated apartments. Let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll be right back here in a few minutes, and we're going to pick up on the concept of why real estate and why large apartments and or small apartments. We'll be right back with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little more. Get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at NPRoss.com. Nathan at NPRoss.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Big dreams and faded jeans.
Welcome back to second segment of the Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just before the break talking about the internal rate of return and the fact that it's a little bit misunderstood. And I guess to me it's not really a good comp when you're looking at, say you're looking at three or four different deals. I think there's other better calculations, the equity multiplier, which is much simpler to calculate, but it's got issues as well. It doesn't consider the timing of the returns, and you know, cash on cash return is another one we use. That's got probably a little bit more clarity as long as it's provided to you by year as opposed to just in one lump. But I guess what I'm getting at is this is why we look at more than a few different metrics. And, you know, we will be talking more about the different metrics, have in the past, and we'll do it again because I realize, first of all, it's hard to pick a lot of this stuff up on the radio, on the air when you're listening. And we will be adding more resources to the website to where you'll be able to follow along or see examples, etc. But in any event, in general, excuse me, the reason that we like these private partnership syndications, whether large or small, and by that I mean both the number of partners and typically also in terms of the acquisition cost. It's going to be less, obviously, on a 8-unit, excuse me, versus a 300-unit. But the goal for the passive is that, you know, you want to be earning like a landlord, but not necessarily working like one. And when you talk about the large syndications, the beauty of it is it's you come closer to achieving a more professional mix of participants in terms of the manager versus the other passive investors. And it's not a perfect scenario by any stretch. There's different levels of competence out there. There's different levels of it's not just competence. It's, I guess, a little bit of luck in terms of acquisition opportunities. It's being connected to the market where you learn about things. I know in the small apartment world, what we seek for is what we call a pocket deal where it's not listed. And same in the large apartment space. I mean, I see a lot of syndicators that talk about buying a property, and they'll say, well, it wasn't even on the market. Well, it could be, that's right. But it also could be indirectly because the broker that works with that syndicator could be pinging a lot of people like you if you're the lead that you know, seems to be so lucky. But there's no question, once something gets into the territory where it's on websites, it's being promoted by, you know, a large brokerage, you know, like a Marcus & Millichap or a Cushman Wakefield, CBRE or CRB, I think it's CBRE, I get it confused. By then, the cat's kind of out of the bag and you get into a real negotiation, and if it's a quality property, can drive the price up. But, you know, we like to find those deals where, you know, there's either distress with the property or there's distress with the owner. And that can be from, you know, a death in the family, so to speak, or it can be because, you know, they've had significant deferred maintenance that's stacked up over the years, and there just hasn't been the capital or the intestinal fortitude, as the case might be, to undertake those repairs. And, of course, what happens when you let a property stagnate or, worse, decline? Well, your rents either go down directly or they go down indirectly because everybody around you is able to increase their rents because they've got a product that is better than yours, either curb appeal or the amenities that are offered, etc. So the small apartment space is something that we tend to see more opportunity, just not in as big a chunks as you might on the large apartment arena. And I'm going to say large apartments would be, you know, 200, 250 on up. Small apartments could be anything from a quad, a four-unit building or property, to 100, 150, somewhere in there. And there's a difference in the way those operate, and there's a big difference, and this is why we like them, in terms of your capital being diluted. If you were to join with, say, three or four other passive investors or active investors and go take down that 30-unit or 50-unit property. And what you'll find is in the larger transactions, there's not many lead partners or syndicators that are going to let there be several chefs in the kitchen. In other words, they don't want your active participation, and which means you won't get the tax benefits that come with that right away. You'll get the tax benefits eventually. The issue there is when you sit in on the glitzy investment webinars that precede most all of these offerings at the larger level, you're going to hear a lot of excitement in the voices of those that put these seminars on or webinars on about the significant tax benefits. You know, you can put $100,000 in and maybe get $80,000 in losses in year one. Well, don't be fooled by that. Yeah, they may be allocated to you, but it's likely you won't be able to use them. Even if you're a real estate professional, you won't use them unless you're day-to-day in some facet of management activity and your ownership level is high enough. And so the beauty about the small apartments is that if you've got three or four people as partners, it's kind of like us going and starting our own lemonade stand where, you know, one person shows up on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and maybe another one covers Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Another one covers keeping supplies ordered, maybe doing some social media posts. There's roles that three or four or five, maybe half a dozen partners can fill that will qualify those folks to achieve, most likely, the professional real estate or real estate pro, rather, status that will let you deduct those losses from day one without limitation and not just against your other real estate income. You know, if your wife is working as a doctor, for example, you have high income, the nirvana is for you to be able to qualify as a real estate professional if you're the husband. I guess I should say spouses. I don't want to get into these pronouns. I may be wrong, correct? So whichever spouse is not running the apartments is the high income earner. The other spouse can be the one that qualifies as a real estate professional. That is nirvana when it comes to a $10 million or $15 million small apartment building that generates a lot of first-year write-offs, even here in the age of reduced phase-out on bonus depreciation. In any event, I'm going to suggest if you're not already looking to do your own building, don't look at it necessarily to do it by yourself. Look, as we all get older, we tend to realize how much wiser it is to have partners. Let's make the pie bigger for everybody, and let's go get more pie, right, or go buy more pies. And I'll tell you, if you haven't thought about taking a break from the stock market, now's a good time. And I'll say that almost any time's a good time to get off the roller coaster of what the normal market has to offer. Or I guess you could say, well, you know, I invest in index funds, so I get a decent return wherever or whatever. Well, you're not getting 20 and 30% returns annually, which is what I still see on, you know, in the apartment business. Now, obviously, there's no guarantees, but I'll just tell you, that's what it often works out to, and it's clearly somewhere between 10 and 30% for most people. So consider getting off the roller coaster and taking a look at either the large or the small private partnerships. I think you'll be impressed with the type of returns you can get. And if you don't have enough retirement wealth already saved, this is one of the few asset classes that will get you there. Let's see. Did I have one more news article? Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment with all the doom and gloom we hear, and even in the Phoenix area, there's an article I pulled on Phoenix this week where city council approved plans for 1,890 more apartment units, and I just thought, you know, that market supposedly has cooled off, and yet here's, you know, more units being approved, and that means there's a developer behind that. This is not state money or city money. As the next article is, we'll talk about here in just a second. And there's still demand. There's still, you know, the office market is the one that's struggling to find tenants. And, you know, the remote work business model, you know, has become a thing. And a lot of businesses are figuring out, well, you know, we really don't need all that overhead of that Class A or B office building. I know I've got my Houston office is in a building there on Westheimer, 11,200. So it's a mile outside Beltway 8. It's not a great area from a crime and a, I don't know, that part of the city to me is become very unappealing, cleanliness-wise, crime-wise, et cetera. my son and I came back to America here last November, December, part of January time frame. And I remember the first week we were there, I was still up in the room trying to do some work before walking across the street to the office. In case you're wondering why I would get a hotel in that area. And my son called me and he said, "Papa, is it normal for the police to come in and arrest somebody sitting at the table next to me?" Because that's what just happened. And I said, "Well, you know, in today's times, I guess it probably is. So keep your eyes open. Don't assume anybody's your friend. And, you know, just keep your head up, pay attention, and get back up here, you know, as soon as you can." But it's crazy what's going on there. And I used to think of Houston as being home. And I tell you, I was talking to my wife, who was still back in Southeast Asia at the time. And I said, you know, I just want to come home, thinking, you know, that Bangkok, Thailand was now home versus Houston, Texas. It was just palpable, the difference. And it's not every city. I went over to see my properties in San Antonio several times during that trip, and San Antonio seemed to be pretty much the same, except for the level of construction. It booming everywhere on all sides of town. 18,000 more apartment units coming here in the next 12 months, and everywhere else, you know, incredible construction. And so I told my business partner, I said, "Look, the price of real estate in San Antonio, Texas has never been higher in the history of the world. And so we're putting everything we have on the market. If it sells, it sells. If it doesn't, it doesn't." So for anybody that might want a condo, small, historical, vintage, luxury, we call it, 105 years old, two blocks off the Riverwalk, let me know. I'll cut the price a little bit, but we are seeking Mr. and Ms. Homeowner. I'm not pricing those units for an investor. I'm the investor. I'm the one clipping the coupon. But I tell you what, San Antonio is on fire. And unfortunately, Austin has turned into the next San Francisco. The homeless problem is truly a problem there now. It's costing them corporate relocations that are coming to San Antonio. And San Antonio has always wanted to be Austin. They've always felt slighted. And now they're going to get what they wish for. And I got to think that 3 or 4 years down the road, they're going to look around and say, "Hey, you know, why did we want this again?" So anyway, let's go ahead and take our second. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's hold on. Let's talk about the last article. It won't take me but a minute. I found it interesting that California, the article that I have out here, is going to invest three-fourths of $1 billion, literally, in affordable housing project. And it's not just the housing, but that's the bulk of it. It's also going to put, I believe it's, 2,500 affordable homes. It's not apartments. I don't believe they're saying homes. That should be interesting out there, and that's where I'm headed. You'll find out what it costs to build affordable here in a second. And 150 new zero emission buses, which no doubt cost a lot more than the good old petrol or diesel burning buses, and more than 50 miles of new bikeways, and they're going to improve sidewalks. That's going to be statewide. But anyway, you can knock off a little bit, but I just calculated, you know, I used the 757 number divided by 2,500. That's $302,000 a home. That's their definition of affordable. I suspect. I don't know. Maybe some of those homes, maybe it's just a percentage of them. I don't know. But that's the state. investing. And maybe it's even worse. Maybe they're putting in a piece and then they're going to have some partnership. It's being done through their Affordable Housing Sustainable Communities program. I guess, you know, they may be partnering with developers. But that's pretty remarkable. That's how they do it in California. And we would do it that way maybe in Austin, but for what's going on right now. And they've got some challenges, and it didn't appear that it's going to get better before it gets worse for my friends that live there in Austin and understand they have some work, some consulting they do in that the homeless shelter type space. But anyway, let's hope they can turn that around. Okay, now we're going to take a break, and we'll be back here momentarily with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just wrapping up some of the news articles that we've been talking about. I'm going to pivot and talk about a current opportunity. This, as with many of the projects we talk about, is out on the Realty Mogul crowdfunding platform. If you're not familiar with that one, there's several fairly successful, I call them the major leagues of crowdfunding Not that there's anything wrong with the minor leagues if you're in the right conference, I guess the case might be. There's a lot of money that gets made in the minor leagues, and including, as I was talking about small apartments earlier, I'm going to tell you right now the difference between the major leagues and the minor leagues, at least when it comes to small apartments that you're a active participant in, is that the larger projects will sap 30% to 50% of your capital out in terms of fees. And those are fees typically that get paid to the team and or their affiliates. And unfortunately, you'll never really understand who all the affiliates are or the conflicts of interest that occur between the, say, the management company or a lender or any one of a number of roles that occur in a large syndication. And the problem is that all the private placement memorandums, the PPMs and the operating agreements, or both as the case may be, they disclaim all of the potential conflicts. They tell you right up front, hey, we may not have negotiated, or we didn't. They're not going to say we may not have. They're going to say there was no arm's length negotiation on our fees or on some of our affiliate fees. They may be using their own in-house rehab or construction company, and they will explain that not only were they not arm's length negotiated, they may not be the low-cost option. And they say it with a straight face. They assume that most investors are not going to read this stuff. You're going to be so excited from watching the beautiful, I mean, the investment webinars, incredible document layouts, PowerPoints, the investor relations staff have all the right buzzwords. They all understand this space. They understand how to reel you in. Big fish on the hook when they get you interested in investing. And I don't begrudge the syndicators that are good at making money for their partners. If they're making money consistently for their partners, they deserve a higher fee. But do they deserve it up front on day zero, as I call it, when they're walking out of closing, when they acquire the beat-up old Class C or B apartment building that they're going to work their value-add magic on? I say they don't. I say there should be nothing up front other than the promote that they're getting, which that would be an override. We refer to it as the promote fee for them undertaking the transaction, which effectively is millions of dollars. You take let's just talk about a medium-sized $50 million transaction where the amount of capital, these days you can pretty much count on about a 40% minimum level of capital. Let's just call it 50 to make the math well or work well. So on a $50 million transaction, that's $25 million. In terms of the investor capital, and let's assume the syndicator's getting 30%. So that's, just call it $7.5 million. It depends on how you calculate the ordering there, but $7.5 million on day zero is going to the syndicator. It's not cash being wired to their account. I don't mean to make it sound like that. That's that. What that would be, that'd be your acquisition fee, your due diligence fees, your debt placement fees, your equity raise fees, some of the construction management fee if you're presumably starting rehab right away. That's going out on day zero. The promote is not cash. That's going to come throughout the project, typically from sharing in the distributions that occur, any refinance proceeds that might occur, and, of course, in the disposition of the property at the end, assuming there is a gain. And, of course, there will be a disposition fee as well. And we're talking 1% or 2% in most cases. Acquisition fees, another 1% or 2%. You just start adding these up, and it's like I say, your $100,000 investment becomes maybe $50,000 to $60,000 in terms of the component that actually works to work to make you money in your real estate deal. Now let's look at a small apartment building. You know, you can pay a property manager just like the big boys will in many cases, typically 3 to maybe 5%. You might also, you're going to take care of asset management, so you'll still have that 2% to divvy up to the partners. But you're talking about a very small dilution of capital. Now, admittedly, you've got professional fees that will not be borne as easy over, you know, 50 units versus 350, because, you know, when you pay a syndication lawyer, if you need to syndicate it formally, which you may not if you're all active, you know, there's some costs that aren't quite as neatly covered, but I'll just tell you, overall, much, much lower acquisition or cost when it comes to the dilution of your capital. And the other issue there is that everything else, whether it's interim cash flows or refinance or ultimately the disposition of the property, think about having an extra 30 to 40% gain that you're sharing amongst, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 partners that would be missing if you had a lead partner that was a syndicator that's taken out that promote at that level. But anyway, let's talk now about one of the, this one kind of straddles the fence. It's got the fees more tuned to the big transaction, but it's only a, let's see, this one I believe is a, is it 100? Yeah, it's a 100 unit boutique residential community in the Phoenix area, I believe, speaking of Phoenix. And this syndicator is very experienced, 24 properties worth over $883 million. That's the kind of projects he's led over the past 9 years. And, you know, similar properties, executing the same business plan. We would call that rinse and repeat, like you would do a shampoo. And, again, you're trying to reduce the likelihood and impact of project issues, keeping fees rational, and successfully using their management expertise to execute the business plan. And the value-add business plan, and this is common, they're going to rebrand the asset. Remember that what's in a name that we talked about at the outset of today's show. And they're going to update marketing programs. In other words, they want to increase occupancy, but not just increase occupancy. They want to do so at a higher level of rent. So they're looking to do this on new people walking up that are wanting to rent in that building in that area. And they're also, as they renew leases, they want to bring those tenants on if they care to continue living there. And most owners, by the way, would love to renew existing tenants. Much less expensive, and it costs you a lot of money when you allow someone or encourage someone to move out, which you may want to if you're doing a significant interior renovation. This particular property is not doing what I would call a heavy interior renovation, but you know, again, you might be able to avoid that investment for another year or two or longer if you renew the existing tenant at maybe not quite the top rate that one of the newer amenitized units would have. Or you may convince the tenant to move into one of the units you've just undertaken the renovations on, because you typically don't empty out the whole property, at least not on a 100-unit property to do that. In any event, they're going to allow three different investment tiers, a Class A, B, and C, and each one of them has different level of return, and their participation is different. And this this syndicator says it's interesting how the language varies from syndicator to syndicator, and this is kind of a way to tell you some what I would say is not so desirable news, but it does apply to certain investor types. They don't care about participating in the gains at the end. But here's the way they say it. They're talking about Class A. This class is for those investors who want consistent 10% pure cash flow paid out on a quarterly basis. So pure being the operable word there, that means there's not going to be any participation at the end when it's sold. Of course, that assumes there's something to participate in. And these days, with the cap rates moving, and I know we talked briefly about cap rates earlier, let's just say that's that one that, if you'll recall, I said was an unknown. You don't control it. But in any event, they're limiting this class to 20% of the total equity, and they get paid out before Class B and C. Class B is the basic investment class, mixing long-term equity growth with some cash flow. That provides a 7% preferred and a 70-30 payout once there's a gain, or they call it the profit split. That's how they obscure the fact that Class A isn't getting, or I say obscure, trust me, the private equity folks that take that Class A investment, that they know exactly what they're doing. But I find it an interesting way to say it. So Class B is going to get not quite as rich of a return quarterly, and it's only going to be if there is enough cash flow after paying Class A. Class C is for those that want a larger amount of equity. Again, this is a clever way to pitch these three classes. And they get an 8% return and an 80-20 split on the back end, but they're looking for more equity. Well, I'm going to come back to this one next week because I do like some of the metrics here. It's got a great debt structure, a 65% LTV, which we don't see much anymore. So remind me, somebody, if you will, next week I want to finish up on the Phoenix deal. So anyway, thanks for tuning in. Enjoyed it. We're hoping Dan can rejoin us next week. And if you have any questions or want to hear something discussed, shoot me a text to 713-581-0195. Thank you. We'll see you next week, Friday, 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.